Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for June, Thursday, June, where are we? The 16th. Wow, June is flying by too, just like May did. We began with an unhappy story on the front page of the Herald and Review, written by Huey Freeman, who's one of their staff writers, this from Decatur. Trooper might have hit 108 miles per hour before fatal crash. The Illinois State Police vehicle that crashed into a van driven by Kelly Wilson, 26-year-old mother of two, may have been traveling at a speed of 108 miles per hour shortly before impact. That was the testimony of Master Sergeant Shad Edwards, who was detailed to the scene of the crash on the city's northwest side just after it occurred on Saturday night, May 7th. Edwards testified Wednesday at the Macon County Coroner's inquest, which was held to determine the manner of Wilson's death. The jurors ruled that the death was accidental. Master Sergeant Jeff Denning, who was seriously injured in the crash, was driving toward Interstate 72 to respond to an incident in which a police officer was shot in Mahomet about 10:45 p.m. that night. That shooter, Dracy Clint Pendleton, 35, was subsequently the subject of an intensive police manhunt. He was killed during a shootout in Shawnee National Forest on May 15th. An additional factor in the fatal accident, released to the public for the first time at the inquest, was that Wilson had a blood alcohol count of 0.094%, exceeding the legal limit of 0.080. The presence of THC, the active ingredient of marijuana, was also found in her bloodstream, according to the report. Coroner Michael E. Day said it could have been in her body for days or weeks before the crash. At about 11 p.m. on May 7th, Denning was driving on Illinois 48 just south of Grand Avenue when he received the call about the Mahomet shooting incident, Edwards testified. Master Sergeant Denning responded that he would be responding to the call, Edwards said. He activated his emergency lights and began traveling north on Route 48 toward I-72. He was a supervisor, one of only two troopers working that night in District 10, composed of nine counties, including Macon and Champaign. He was told the subject was fleeing on 72, Edwards said. The subject could flee east or west. If the subject went west on I-72, his mission would be to intercept that person. As a shift commander, he would be expected to respond to the scene and coordinated whatever would happen there as well. Edwards, who was off duty, was dispatched to the scene after the crash occurred at 11:02 p.m. He said Denning was driving an unmarked police car, a 2013 Chevy Caprice, with internal emergency lights operating. One witness at the scene reported that he heard the siren, while another said he did not. Wilson, driving a 2003 Honda van, was westbound on Harrison Avenue, which has a stop sign at the intersection with Illinois 48, which is also Oakland Avenue in that stretch of road. Edwards said a witness reported that Ms. Wilson pulled up to the stop sign and stopped. She looked in both directions and then proceeded directly out in front of Master Sergeant Denning's squad car. Denning reported that he was northbound, paying attention to vehicles to his right, watching for one to yield to him when at the last second the vehicle pulled out in front of him, Edwards said. Denning said he steered his squad car to the left as an evasive action hit his brake pedal, quote, at which time he struck the driver's side door of Ms. Wilson's vehicle. She was turning left toward the southbound lanes of Oakland Avenue. As Denning's vehicle fishtailed and stopped in the middle of the road, Wilson's van slammed into the curb at the west edge of the southbound lanes and rolled over. She was wearing her seatbelt. The autopsy, completed the following day at the McLean County Morgue, showed that she died of multiple blunt injuries within about a minute. Edward said he was given information the night of the crash on the speed of the police vehicle. I was told the preliminary finding from the airbag control module download was 108 miles per hour, 2.5 seconds before the crash, Edward said. There is a different speed at the time of the crash, approximately 0.5 second before the crash, the speed was 85 miles per hour. Edwards, lead investigator in this case, said state law allows for officers to, quote, violate any of the Illinois state vehicle codes as long as your emergency lights are activated, end quote. There are exceptions to the rule of mandatory light activation, including responses to silent alarms or bank alarms. There is no rule or department policy that sets parameters of speed and so forth, Day asked. There is no specific speed, no sir, Edward said. The conditions were clear and dry with ample artificial lighting. Edward said visibility to Wilson's left toward the northbound traffic would have been unhindered. But there was a building to her right which could have been obstructive of her view of southbound traffic. Illinois State Police Sergeant Steve Cody, lead reconstruction investigator, said the investigation is continuing. Footage from the video camera, which was mounted on the windshield of the squad car, has been sent to the manufacturer for further analysis. In general, video footage might be difficult to retrieve because of the impact of the crash on the camera. Day asked Cody if it is routine for crashes involving state police officers to be investigated by the same department. Yes, sir, Cody said. He said an in-depth investigation was underway. It would be premature to comment on the speeds involved, view obstructions, skid marks on the road, or possible driver distractions until the investigation report was completed. Data such as speed from the van was not readily accessible, Cody testified. Day asked Cody if Denning had been tested for alcohol or other substances. Quote, I don't know the protocol at the hospital, Cody said. We need probable cause to test for that. We would do that in an officer-involved shooting. End quote. Cody said he did not talk to Denning after the accident. Denning remains off duty as he recovers from his injuries. He suffered fractures to his pelvis and foot, as well as lacerations, including one requiring stitches. Wilson was pronounced dead early the morning of May 8th, Mother's Day. She was alone in the van at the time of the accident. She is survived by two daughters, 7-year-old Ella and 2-year-old Addie. Attorney Tim Shea, who was present at the inquest, said he has been retained by Wilson's parents, administrators of her estate, to investigate the circumstances of her death. We were stunned to learn that Officer Jeff Denning was traveling at 108 miles per hour on a city street, Shea said. Based upon the information we found today and our own independent investigation, we anticipate filing a civil lawsuit for the wrongful death of Kelly Wilson. Our next article is from Springfield, but it's also on the front page of the Herald and Review, so we're going to read it. It's written by Dan Petrella, who is the H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Road work bonds offered for vital work, state leaders say. Illinois Transportation Secretary says the state faces the unprecedented prospect of missing a road construction season if lawmakers fail to approve a stopgap spending plan that Governor Bruce Rauner has proposed. We're on the brink of what was once unthinkable, the suspension of the Illinois Department of Transportation's construction program, DOT Chief Randy Blankenhorn said Wednesday at a news conference with Rauner in the governor's statehouse office. We were able to avoid this scenario a year ago with the passage of a capital appropriation that was signed by the governor, who clearly understands the role Illinois plays as a transportation hub of North America. On the final day of Democratic-controlled legislature's spring session, May 31st, the Republican governor proposed a temporary spending plan that would fund elementary and secondary education next school year and other state operations through December. Included are funding for road construction and money to restart work on projects at state facilities that have been delayed for the past year due to the lack of spending authority from the General Assembly. We are on a collision course with having to shut down projects throughout the state in a matter of a few short weeks, Blankenhorn said. I can't overstate the consequences of inaction. DOT has more than 800 ongoing projects, totaling more than $2 billion and involving roughly 25,000 workers, he said. Without legislative approval for continued spending, those projects will shut down when the state's new fiscal year begins July 1st, and the state will incur additional costs to restart them. Jody Golden, who heads the Capital Development Board, said her agency has faced a similar scenario for the past year because, quote, the majority party, end quote, didn't approve spending for more than 200 ongoing projects at public universities and other state facilities. The sad truth is, without a stopgap funding bill, we won't be able to pay for the necessary projects to fix our corrections facilities, our universities, and our veterans' homes, Golden said. Both agency heads said the lack of funding also has an economic impact on the communities where projects are supposed to take place. Rauner, who spent the past year saying he wasn't interested in short-term budget solutions, now is urging lawmakers to return to Springfield to pass his stopgap plan. He said it represents a compromise because it isn't attached to any items on his pro-business, union-weakening turnaround agenda. It's fair. This is affordable. It's the right thing to do, Rauner said on Wednesday. The governor said a plan that allows schools to open on time in the fall and funds other state operations until after the November election would allow negotiations to continue on the, quote, balanced budget with reforms, end quote, he's been pushing for since taking office. We've got to take a short-term action now and then a long-term action, he said. On a similar note, Rauner defended the plan to go to the bond market today to borrow $550 million to fund construction projects despite the lack of a budget. Borrowing for government operations is not the right thing to do, he said, adding, what is appropriate and is always appropriate no matter what, is to grow our economy and grow jobs through infrastructure. We can't have a healthy economy, we can't create jobs, unless we invest in our infrastructure. Meanwhile, bipartisan groups of lawmakers continue meeting to negotiate broader compromises on the budget and Rauner's policy agenda. Senator Gary Forby, a Democrat of Benton, was at the Capitol on Wednesday for one of those gatherings. He said progress is being made, but reaching an agreement by July 1st seems unlikely. It's kind of slow, Forby said. I'm kind of a fast-track guy. I like to see it go faster, but they are working, and I think they are worthwhile, or I wouldn't be here. I'm turning over to the Decatur Tribune now, the online edition. And I don't know whether this might have been read before, but it's a complicated issue about video gaming. And so, it may be worth hearing again. City Council members discuss video gaming in a study session. Council members on Monday of this week began discussion of video gaming in the city of Decatur, with city staff presenting information on spending, the number of locations, and other data related to the issue. During a Monday study session, City Finance Director Greg Ziantara indicated that as of that date, there were 75 sites in Decatur that have video gaming. Wow, with a total of 353 machines, up from three establishments in December 2013. Wow, that's big growth. Decatur establishments collected a total of $17,936,289 in net terminal income, also known as NTI, on almost $70 million in funds placed in machines in Decatur in 2015. That's called funds in. And gaming entities are projected to generate more than $23 million in $1 million in net terminal income in 2016. The gaming terminology relative to the video gaming revenue discussion include the following. Funds in is defined as money placed into gaming device terminal by the player. Funds out is winnings from any wager plus player return of unplayed monies placed into the terminal, the device terminal. Phew. The net terminal income, the NTI, as I said, is money placed into gaming terminals minus credits or winnings paid out to the player. And then NTI is revenue shared by the parties. Okay, now they've given two definitions there, so that's a little confusing. Net terminal income is distributed as follows in the following percentages. 35% goes to the gaming device owner operator, 35% goes to the local establishment, which is Decatur license holder. And I wonder why the owner-operator might be different than the local establishment. I wonder if they discussed that. And then 25% to the state of Illinois. And finally, 5% to the city of Decatur. There were no recommendations or formal decisions made during Monday's study session, and staff will return at a later date with additional information. In other business, council gave the go-ahead to perform or take critical steps toward performing sewer-related infrastructure work totaling almost $16 million in Decatur. Ooh, a lot of money being thrown around in those discussions. Our next article has a byline. J. Thomas McNamara writes that Williams resigns as Moroa Forsyth Superintendent, effective June 30th. Michael Williams resigned Thursday. Oh, so this must be a week old. Maybe this is old news for you. I'll just go a little into this article. As Moroa Forsyth Superintendent, when asked by McNamara, Moroa Forsyth School Board President Russ Corey provided the following statement on Williams' resignation. Quote, "The superintendent delivered his letter of resignation to me on May 26th that is effective June 30th. The board has not had an opportunity to act on the resignation, and there is nothing further to say at this time." End quote. Williams' present contract will expire at that time. In an interview with that reporter the following day, Williams said he is proud of his years of serving the Moroa Forsyth District as its superintendent, as he is finishing his 14th year in education there, including the last 10 as superintendent and the previous 4 as principal. I have a job to do, and I did, said Williams, who took the professional route in his conversation with this writer. We provided facilities for our teachers to do what they do, which is to educate our kids. The author of the article, J. Thomas McNamara, at the very end of this story, which we have not read in its entirety, that he would have more on this developing story in the future, in a future print edition of the Decatur Tribune. So I suspect there may be an update there. I'm going to turn back to the front page of the online edition of the Tribune and pick up a portion of Paul Osborne's City Beat column, who he apparently has some comments also about the business of video gaming. He headlines it, "Double Wowie." During a study session at the last meeting of the Decatur City Council, City Finance Director Greg Ziantara indicated that as of that meeting's date, there are 75 sites in Decatur that have video gaming, with a total of 353 machines, up from the 3 establishments in Decatur in December 2013. Decatur establishments collected a total of, as I say, almost $18 million in net terminal income on almost $70 million in funds placed in machines in Decatur in 2015, and that gaming entities are projected to generate more than $23 million in net terminal income in 2016. Can you say out of control gaming indicator, which recently increased its unemployment rate to 7%? Doesn't it make you wonder where the $70 million came from that was spent indicator on gaming last year? Yeah, it does. Last week's scrapbook article was about the establishment of the city of Decatur 160 years ago and was written by Mark Sorensen. It had a quote about the city fathers and gaming that appeared in the December 20th, 1855 edition of Decatur's weekly newspaper, the Illinois State Chronicle, which printed the law of the city regarding the listed duties of the city council, including providing the city with water and street lights, as well as licensing and taxing businesses. The council was also, quote, to restrain and entirely suppress tippling houses, dram shops, and gaming houses, and bawdy houses, and all other disorderly houses, end quote. Many of the old settlers were apparently concerned about the Irish element that had moved in along the railroads. That sound you hear coming from local cemeteries is the founders of our city spinning in their graves. It's more of an editorial I shouldn't have done till the second half hour, but gosh, it just seemed to fit here. I'm heading back over to the Decatur Herald and Review with an article written by Valerie Wells, one of their staff writers. RCC finalist knows budget woes. Melissa DiNardo is no stranger to operating in a state with budget crises. Her home state of Pennsylvania has been without a budget for a year with no end in sight, much the same situation as Illinois is in, and at the Community College of Beaver County, where she is provost, they've had to tighten their belts. DiNardo is one of 2 finalists for the position of president of Richland Community College and was the subject of a community forum on Wednesday at the Decatur Club to allow the public to meet her and ask questions. Cristobal Valdez was interviewed on June 14th. The third candidate has withdrawn due to family obligations. The Board of Trustees will meet Friday, that's tomorrow, and may decide on a candidate then, Chairman Bruce Campbell said. DiNardo said one of her goals as president of Richland would be to help find ways to be more independent of state funding so that riding out trying times won't be as much of a challenge. The Beaver County College held a campus-wide meeting and laid out the finances for the entire faculty and staff and asked for ideas to address the issue. One way they increased revenue was to get each student on a payment plan to keep tuition dollars coming. They also developed an aviation academy with the high schools in their area, where students can take dual credit courses and earn a private pilot's license by graduation, with a chance to get a bachelor's degree afterward on the Beaver County campus. I'm very excited about all of the new programs and the buildings that are going on, DiNardo said. Not just the buildings, but what we're doing as far as the initiatives. The new business area is certainly exciting. Her biggest priorities include student success and having the programs that fit with the needs of the business community so that students will have job opportunities. She meets with the area's school superintendents monthly to work on increasing enrollment and creating programs that will serve their students, including instituting tracks in the schools to prepare students for careers in specific fields, but allowing them to change their minds if they decide to pursue a different field. Her background is as a high school business teacher. She moved into higher education as an assistant professor at Indiana University of Pennsylvania and was named Faculty Member of the Year at Colorado Mountain College. She said Wednesday that her goal had not been administration, but a significant hearing loss made teaching difficult. Filling in for a dean at her college showed her that administration was something she could enjoy doing. Her doctoral dissertation was on critical thinking, and she believes in problem-based learning, she said. What increases critical thinking skills is working on real-life projects, she said. Maybe that was project-based learning, not problem as is written. On real-life projects, she said, citing a school she studied while working on her doctorate. Those students worked with NASA on a project to get information on moon rocks to Earth without bringing the rocks themselves. That sounds like a doctoral dissertation to me. Doesn't it sound that way to you? We are running out of time for this first half hour. How about quickly I let you know about a candlelight prayer vigil to honor victims and survivors from the Orlando, Florida shooting tragedy will be held at 7 p.m. tonight. That's tonight, 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church at 204 West Prairie Avenue. And obviously it's open to the public. And one other quick thing, Old Sangamon Road will be closed from 6:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. on Friday. That's tomorrow, so make your plans now. 6:30 to 2:30 tomorrow, Old Sangamon Road will be closed for crossroad culvert replacement at its intersection with Bender Drive. Like I say, make your plans now. We're going to take a quick break and return with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area. We hope you can hang on. We'll be right back.